when I first read it, I read the executive summary, and then I started jotting it, like reading the executive summary all over again.
Can I just respond, though, only because it's been raised sort of a number of times, is we've from the feedback, because this was mentioned at the last meeting, I think, and so we have actually had a sort of three-pager produced to put that sort of creativeness to it, about creating a more concise articulation, if you like, that could be used probably with a much broader range of audience, as well as it being more digestible maybe to ministers. We didn't circulate that with this because we think, although we completely recognise that we need to do it, I don't think we need to do it right now. I think we need to do it sort of at the next, sort of when we've got that really crisp, we've got it maybe a bit crisper than we have, maybe. So we have had a go at that based on the feedback last time, and it was a very useful exercise, because I think it from our point of view, we had someone else's take on what the strength of what the articulation was, which was really useful for us to reflect on as well. We didn't share that. We can. I don't think it's of much value now. But so we have done that. But I think the value of the exercise has shown that we absolutely will do that once we're at the sort of next iterations, when we've got a bit more of the punchy detail in there.
So, Colette.
Thanks. So I'm probably going to reiterate something that people have already said, but just to say that somebody who's quite new to the conversations around the table about the federated areas and everything, actually I think the document did a really brilliant job of describing what unites us. So well done for that, the Valley Coastal and the UK Gateway, etc. So that's really brilliant. Thank you as well, because I know you came to the Skills Advisory Panel, and I can see some of the feedback directly that's been fed into that. But just to one note that I know that they would like me to say is around the opportunities of London are articulated, but they felt very strongly that there was also a challenge, particularly around the brain drain and skills being... And I think that they would like me to say that it would be good not to miss the opportunity to acknowledge that that's a challenge. Also, from the creative industry side of things, the CKM, I know, fed in really a lot already, and I've got a document here that I think they've sent to you. But again, just some of the flavour of the creative industries throughout the document would be really good, and I think would really help, particularly around things like the attraction strategy, bringing that to life, describing a little bit more detail around how creative and technology and the R&D side of things, just putting a little bit meat on the bones in the narrative, would be really good. And then I know you just explained about the summary, but, with the creative industries in mind, we've got so many brilliant writers, copywriters, and actually fresh eyes on a document at the very end is a really good idea. And I just, it's a plea, really, to sort of utilise some of that skill from externally. Yeah. Thanks.
Good. I think that, thank you, Colette. I think that concludes. So
please, Chris, if I may.
So
Chris, I'm sorry, I need one other point. I thought it was going to be raised elsewhere. Just really on the whole business of levelling up, I think we need to be quite careful in our greater southeast ambitions. It seems to me our particular quadrant of the southeast has much more deprivation, or many more deprivation issues than the northwest quadrant, if you like, and than central London. Great, we need to work together and act with them. But we need to keep making the point, as well as how important it is for us to be a gateway, that we need to level up as well to the rest of the southeast of England and the nation.
Exactly.
And I think that, not sure that comes across. I think it's great that we do this collaborative work. There's also the point that we have issues and special problems of our own, which need to be addressed almost independently of that.
Great, okay. Thank you very much, Graham. Sorry, Carol, last word.
One more. It was on the R&D in the loan spend of universities.
Yes.
I think we have to strengthen the language around that to say it's, we submit huge numbers of applications. The majority of those applications that are successful go up the list. So it's not that we're not spending, we're not getting the funding, really, compared to the number of applications that we're submitting. So something around that compared with the Midlands and the North that actually are success rates. And it's not because they're not fit to get from this, because feedback is brilliant. It's just you look at it and you see where the funding is from.
Yes, good point. Okay, Helen, I hope that gives you enough to be working with. Thank you very much.
The next step is an
opportunity to take stock along the way. Clearly, at the next meeting, which is the end of March, there'll be a further opportunity, and there'll be a further redraft from that, hopefully taking the comments that we've had over the course of the last few months, including today. And I hope by the end of March, timetable for the final steps around the list from the government will be clearer. Can't guarantee that.
But it might be because of the importance of this document. Yeah. Don't leave it till 1 week before the next meeting.
No.
Maybe get it out, say, 2 weeks before, so we all have good time to get some
No, that's a good point. Okay. Thank you very much. Helen, thanks very much. So, the next item is on the communication strategy. We'll be launching a new strategy. So Zoe is here to be our communications guru.
Okay, so thank you, Chris. So for anyone in the room who doesn't know me, my name is Zoe Gordon and my role is Business Engagement and Communications for the South East LAC. So I'm just going to talk for a few minutes about the common strategy and protocols. So I'll start with why we need this. So CELAC needs a communication strategy for two principal reasons. The first is to provide assurance to government. So as we know, government expects CELAC to work in an open way. This means that we need to communicate widely about CELAC's work, its purpose, its priorities, projects, and the impact that we have. And also, we need to be clear how we'll meet the standards of transparency expected of LEPs nationally. So the adoption of a communication strategy is a formal requirement of the National Assurance Framework. Obviously, the value of a clear, fit-for-purpose communication strategy goes well beyond this as a formal exercise. Effective communications is part and parcel of our day-to-day. And how we meet our objectives. It's also a really powerful tool to help increase the impact of CELAC's activity. So in the document, we do just set out the main aims of what we hope to achieve through our communications. Of course, the main aim is to support the delivery of CELAC's priorities, but to be open and transparent and also have an impact, as I've just set out, we need to maintain effective dialogue with all actors involved in CELAC. So businesses, education partners, local and central governments. We need to strengthen the credibility of the LAP and be seen in the right places, be heard saying the right things, and be active in the right agendas. We need to develop our reputation as an exemplar of successful delivery. And we won't achieve these objectives simply by having a really good website or providing good briefing to particular members and so on, or through our marketing. It's a bit more complicated than that. So in order to deliver a successful communications approach, there's a series of things that we've set out in the document and here on the slide today. These are just some of the factors that will determine how successful we'll be. But the objectives of the strategy cannot be achieved simply by us as Secretariat or the CELAC comms team acting alone. Realising these objectives is dependent upon effective communications for all those involved in CELAC's work. So whether it be yourselves, board members, sector leads, federated board members, employees, businesses, other organisations delivering projects on behalf of the LEP, those who receive funding administered by the LEP, contractors, consultants, suppliers. And in the document, we set out the scope of who we see is inside the tent in supporting the delivery of CELAC comms. And the document seeks to therefore equip and support all these actors to play their full part. So it provides materials, guidance and protocols to help steer all parties towards effective joined-up communications, which in turn supports and reinforces our brand. So as you can see here, it sets out the key priorities, a clear narrative about CELAC itself, how we operate and our partnership, and also separately about the South East economy. These key messages can and should provide a basis for all partners to communicate about the LEP and its work and the area it serves. And these messages should provide a basis for consistent messaging to a wide range of audiences. As you would expect in a comms strategy, we've set out who we seek to engage with and who we see our audiences being. And then also the channels and means by which we seek to communicate with those different audiences. Finally, the strategy sets out a series of expectations that we should have for different partners, particularly delivery partners and organisations that receive select funding. There's considerations such as publicity, project milestone events, use of logos, etc. And then for individual board members, helpful ways that you can use social media and connect with SELEP on channels like Twitter and LinkedIn and actively engage in our content and how that broadens our reach. And then we set protocols for all representatives of SELEP regarding media engagement, branding, style and tone of written communications. So a couple of considerations when seeking to adopt this strategy is that what we've set out here is really the operation of our existing communications model. We're not setting a new direction, but more committing to paper our approach and how we work and hopefully agreeing to that. And secondly, that this is a very much a working document, so it will evolve with us as a LEP. At the moment, it reflects our current agreed strategy, which is the economic strategy statement, and it reflects our current model of working. Once we have the agreed local industrial strategy, once SELEP Limited is in place, the document and the key messages in there will change to reflect that. We also are going to be working with our broker partners to develop key messages and bullet points around how that works, and things like the social enterprise prospectus, which was recently agreed, and we'll do the same once the creative and coastal prospectuses come forward. It really is supposed to be a helpful document that people can dip into and use. So a few bullet points on all those different topics. If you're networking with somebody or, you know, a partner gets asked a question about SELEP's role in something, that there's a document that people can go to and use. And as you said, Perry, obviously having a strong executive summary for the list, all of that will form part of the content, really, of what we communicate. So just to remind you all what we're asking the board today. So in bringing this strategy, we're asking the board to agree it, and obviously that fulfills a key requirement of the National Assurance Framework, but also to note how you can play a role in shaping and delivering our communications work as we continue to evolve. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, thank you very much. Any comments or observations? Peter?
Thank you, Chair. I'm hugely conscious that we have at least two communications specialists around the table, but started the conversation just then about talking about brand, and I struggle to understand what our brand is, and it isn't set out in here. And the one-line vision, which is, you know, we want to create a place which is prosperous for everybody, I wonder whether there's a place in the UK that doesn't want to create a place that's prosperous for everybody. Now, that's not to say that that's a bad thing. But if it's going to get traction, it's going to be, it may be a little bit difficult. But it's the brand bit. And I look to brand experts on the other side of the table, but I don't get a sense of brand here. Interestingly, I was at South East England Councils, which of course is the other South East rather than this South East, which, you know, in itself is somewhat confusing. Let's not overlay Greater South East, which is the other South East, and this South East together. But let's not worry about that in terms of trying to communicate with people and the complexity of trying to get civilians to understand what we're talking about. They were also talking about brand, and they haven't solved their issue either. Particularly in light of something like the Midlands Engine or the Northern Powerhouse. I think they're happening upon something that has the word bank in it, seeing as, you know, it's the South East that pays for everything. So that's something. But we don't have that sort of easily identifiable brand. You know, I come from Kent. We keep being told that we can't use the Garden of England anymore because it's a bit old-fashioned. Well, you know, we still use the Garden of England because, frankly, that is our brand. It's a brand that people understand. I don't get that here. And that's all I would say. I think some of the work is excellent. It's just that very first bit of work.
I agree with you, but you're right about that.
The list will help with that.
Yeah, the list will hopefully,
hopefully help. Yeah.
Any other comments? Yes, Clive.
Surely the brand, as we identified in the industrial strategy, is Sun Gateway. That's important to the whole country. It's important to government. And it's important to differentiate us from other regions.
Yep. Okay, thank you. Peter?
It's a couple of relatively short points, really. One is the target audience, perhaps also include the utility companies. Broadband and mobile phone coverage, which is particularly important in this area, certainly in Sussex anyway. And the other thing is that there's a phrase used which is coalition for growth there. And I think it's slightly uncomfortable that coalitions tend to be a sort of a kind of coming together of people who really hate each other.
This one's a little piece. Thank you, Peter. Points? Yep. Okay, I have Andrew, Miranda, and then Anna. Andrew.
Thank you. I think, Zoe, the key to this, as with all things, I think the clue's in the name, it's partnership. If this isn't adopted by the partners, whether at county council level, district council level, the federal partner, anyone that has any engagement with CELEP, then it will not work. So we might sign it off around the table here and go, yes, that's fantastic, great bit of work, well done. Putting it into practice will require the involvement of so many more people. So it's not just people around here, it's the person who's head of comms in a district council or a county council, understanding that when they are doing a piece of comms work which has an involvement of CELEP, they recognise CELEP. Because if there's one thing that a journalist hates, it's getting three releases about the same story from three different organisations talking about the same project. They will not use them. So partnership press releases and work is what it's all about, and that's hard work, but it's the only way that it will work. And I know you'll sort it.
Thank you, Andrew. So Miranda, then Anna.
Sorry, I'm going to state the bleeding obvious from one communications professional to another, but I think people should hear this. I'm guessing this is you're at a stage with this, aren't you? And what you're asking us to do is to sign off the broad premise of it, okay? Which I think it's in a good place to go personally, okay, as a comms professional. I'm just picking up, and Colette may say the same as me. You asked how we can help. And I do think Peter's absolutely right. This is the bleeding obvious part of it. Is it needs that bit of colour. It needs that bit of, if people are going to take it and use it and then really get people excited about the what CELEP is. I have just tried to write creative content for the Creative Estuary project. It's not easy. It went to draft 5. And I think you definitely need that help. And I can send you some of what we produce at Creative Estuary just to give you a flavour. I actually think we did nail it in about 5 lines in the end. And pick up on Colette's sort of offer of harnessing those creative people in the area just to give you that colour that you need to make this the best document it can be.
Thank you. So I've got Anna and then Colette. Anna.
Peter's already picked up a couple of the items I was going to raise about utility firms and broadband and mobile. And also in terms of coalition, it's more of a partnership for growth. But one other item in terms of there's various target audiences across the 3 federated areas. So it's how CELEP sees their role in connecting the functions which are performed by each of the 3 federated areas are very different. So how will you connect that up?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. My point was a slightly different one, actually, because just to say that, so my understanding of brand is that it's not just about a logo or a visual identity, it's actually about behaviour, advocacy, and value system. So I really welcome the fact that actually that's written into the strategy, but I just wondered if it might be helpful to include that in the induction of the new board and maybe some sessions that sort of refresh that to people around their responsibilities and giving them some clues around how to do that. But Thank you, Miranda. And yeah, absolutely agree about the sort of added colour. And it could be as simple as an agreed set of images that go alongside the written document that actually everybody has access to, and or agreed sort of 30-second films that are out there. All of that really helps to bring stuff to life.
Sure.
And it would be great if that could be included in.
Yep. Good.
What comes
out. Good suggestion. Martin.
Just to say that I think the communication strategy should make use of the strategic opportunities in this document. You know, the UK's going a great way, the communities of the future, the coastal catalyst. There are three strong ideas there which need to be built into that brand. And if that document can really have those at its heart, I think that's going to have some impact.
Okay. Good. Any more? Yes, Carol.
I'll just reiterate what I said under Liz. Mm-hmm. I will look at what Medway have done.
Yes.
Because it's a lot of partners.
Yes.
But everybody understands.
No, I agree with you. Medway have been a really big carriers here. Mm. They're doing a great job. Yeah. Anybody else? Any further comments? No. Okay, then what I'm going to ask you to do is, subject to those very helpful observations and comments, to agree the adoption of the communication strategy and protocols with those comments taken on board, to note the communications narrative and key messages set out in the communication strategy and protocols, and to note the responsibilities of SELAP members and partners when communicating the work of SELAP and its projects. Are we happy to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Zoe. Let's move on to the next item, which is local growth the 1st of March 2021. It's really important that we maximise investment opportunity with the limited funding and timescales available. This will involve taking some challenging decisions over the course of the next few months to direct the use of local growth fund in the most effective way possible. So, Rhiannon, without leading, Rhiannon, over to you.
So today I'm not going to present a normal capital programme update. We received that in December and we'll receive the next one in the next March meeting. I'm instead going to focus on a particular issue around LGF spend beyond the growth deal period. So as you are probably all aware, the growth deal period itself goes on 2015-16 and is due to end on 31st March 2021. That deadline is something that is being communicated with the growth deal. And is the expectation from the central government itself. I think during early years of the programme, there was a particular message from central government, you spend it or lose it. So we made a huge amount of effort working with local partners to make sure we were spending our allocation each year, wherever that was possible. And if we were not able to spend it on a particular project, we were able to either swap it between projects or certain mechanisms we had in place to make sure we could report back to central government a really positive position around our spend to date. It's also important to note government continues to monitor our delivery progress based on our spend to date. In our annual performance review that we had just last this week, their key performance indicator that they were using was how much we spent to date and how we're showing that progress. So, you know, whilst we're doing brilliant things, I think it's just important to have that in mind. We have put the question to government on a number of occasions to say what is the implication if we don't spend all of our LGF beyond the growth deal period. I think this is the sort of informal advice that's come back. There has been no formal position stated, but the informal advice around this is that the government expects the outcomes to be delivered within the growth deal period as we originally committed to. Where a project is already in train, I don't think government is saying they're going to hand back a project. If you're already out constructing it, you know, if you're delivering a new junction, they can see diggers out on site. I don't think they're in a position to sort of penalise us on that basis. But I think they do want us to have really firm justification if we're starting projects beyond the growth deal period. So if we haven't started construction for projects, I think we just need to have a really, really strong case about why we're still supporting this project. We don't want to be in a position where we're sat on lots of funding at the end of the growth deal period where we could have supported other projects during that time scale. So we put this position to the Canterbury Board last February, and the Canterbury Board agreed five conditions under which they would agree LGF spend beyond the growth period. So this is new products coming forward to the Canterbury Board where we know spend is going to go beyond that timescale. And really to make sure we're only supporting these projects with a really strong case and we're doing this on an exception basis, and they agreed these five criteria. So this is around having a really clear delivery plan and detailed information around the future delivery of the project. I think it's important, if we're supporting projects beyond that period, we've got really real certainty of the ability to deliver. The next bit is around a direct link to jobs and houses, so there's really key benefits associated with each of those projects. The sources of funding are all tied in, so I think lots of these projects that are high risk have issues around the local funding contributions not being available or some similar issues around funding sources. So I think we need to have confirmation these can definitely progress with the funding all in place. The fourth one is around strategic board endorsement, and that's why we're here today, to say, are these still strategically important projects for this board, knowing the fact that the benefits of the project would extend beyond where we originally expected them to be delivered. And the fifth one, reflecting the sort of spade in the ground suggestion, there's contractual commitments in place for the delivery of the project, so that's starting by the 31st of March 2021. So in effect, we're bringing forward five projects to the board today on the basis that the strategic board needs to give and support these projects to progress. My intention is to cover each of these projects in turn, because I think the delivery issues around these projects are quite different, and it's important we consider them appropriately. So just before we move on to each project, just going to consider the impact of agreeing then beyond the gradual period. So I think we need to consider these are projects that have been supported by the Federated Boards and by either strategic board or investment panel previously. So the projects have had previous support. So I think we're just looking for that support to be confirmed or understand the board's updated position on these projects. And there is limited time available to bring forward in timely new projects. So I think we just need to consider the sort of strategic scale of this project that could be brought forward. So if we have only got a year to spend, I think the types of projects that might come forward to use that funding could be quite small in nature potentially. We just need to weigh that up against perhaps having strategic projects that might go beyond the greater period versus smaller quick win projects. I think at the end of the cons around this are, I think it's preventing other projects that we could see on the pipeline that could progress in the meantime. If we've got projects, we're holding a lot of funding in our bank accounts, in Essex County Council bank accounts, that cannot be spent because certain projects can't progress. I think there's other ways of spending that funding more appropriately when we know the infrastructure challenges in our area, and there are a huge number of projects that could progress instead. I think we're still unclear. Government did give some advice around not claiming back that funding, but at the same time, we want to be in as strong a position as possible to make the case for funding in our area. And again, it goes back to, if we've got £60 million left in our bank account at the end of the period, how can we say, well, actually, we need another £100 million or so? It weakens our case around future funding. And I think if we're enabling lots of projects to grow beyond that gradual period, it puts us in difficult positions to be able to put real pressure on local areas to spend and make sure they're progressing projects. If we sort of give an open-ended deadline of when projects can be complete by, we could sort of see the pressure's not there necessarily to progress and spend. So these are just things you might want to consider as we go through each of the projects. So the first project to be considered is the A127 Fairglen Interchange and New Link Road. This project, it is a large-scale project that's always been at the tail end of the programme. And actually, in fact, in this particular project, we're not really seeing any change to the expected completion date for the project. We're really just seeing a change of government wants to spend Department for Transport funding contributions first before the local growth funds contributions. I think the project is in a fairly strong position. It did secure planning consent in December, and it has the funding sources identified. It does require Department for Transport approval of their £15 million funding contribution, but overall I think this project is in a fairly strong position, but it will spend approximately £3.8 million beyond the growth job period. So I don't know how we want to do this.
Just any comments or observations. I mean, should we assume that the board is going to confirm these projects unless anyone here has any objections or so I think we should take each one around the table very quickly. Does anyone we're going to approve these, that's the default position, unless there are objections from anybody or anyone has any concerns, bearing in mind the implications for overall spend, etc., and what we're doing, what we need to do in the future to make sure we actually do get these projects over the line in time. So any comments or observations on the 8127 Fairland Interchange project?
Just to say the Accountability Board considered this and it was a priority as far as they were concerned and it should be done.
Thank you. That's what you want. Is everyone happy to confirm this?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So the next one is Thanet Parkway.
Yeah, next one is Thanet Parkway. I think we've seen this one as a high risk route over a number of years. But actually, I think there's been really positive news actually in the last week where County Council themselves have confirmed a £17 million funding contribution to the project, which gaps.